This is The Mud Peddlers, a podcast where two nerdy ceramic artists share the behind the scenes of their worlds of clay. We are your hosts, Lindsay M. Dillon.
And I am Dante of Earth Nation.
Ooh, okay.
It's fine, I got it.
Yeah,
cool.
The young...
You're all very nice.
Okay, we're like not starting until 2 minutes or 3 minutes from now, but who thinks they're the youngest person in this room? We won't do oldest because, you know...
But. Do you mean youngest by age or youngest,
yeah, youngest
in their
by
clay?
Age.
Okay.
How old are you?
23.
20? Do we have any 19s in here? 19, 19, 19? No? Age. Oh, Isaac, are you 18? Ooh, 20. So you're in college? Oh, good. Okay. Oh, in Indiana. Awesome. Fantastic. We still have 2 minutes. Should we start?
I don't know.
We should just start. With intros?
Yeah, we'll start. Okay. We're going to go ahead and introduce ourselves. You say you want us to wait?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, never mind.
Wants to start on the dot.
Who traveled the farthest to get here? Okay. California?
Yeah.
California, we got any Washington people?
Jody, where'd you come?
Woo!
Jody, where'd you travel from?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. I think Jody's got Seattle beat. Canadian?
California's not that far. Is that the farthest one, California?
Vancouver?
He said Vancouver Island, Canada.
That's far.
Yeah, it's far.
I came from California. This is like 4 hours.
Puerto Rico. Oh, we've got a Puerto Rico coming. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who got very little sleep before they got on their flight to get here?
Oh. I know. Okay, who thinks they've been in clay the longest? The longest. How long? Yeah, in clay the longest. Like, when did you start doing clay? Like
23 years? Hell yeah.
25 years? Oh, 35. Do we got
Karen.
Anybody above 35?
45.
Julianne's figuring it out. 34? 45? Oh, 45. That's a long time.
Okay. 45, I feel like, why are you listening to us talk on podcasts?
Yeah, seriously.
What do we have the value of off to offer?
I forgot one announcement I did want to make before we actually get started, is that Amoco supports a lot of the podcasts that are a part of the Brickyard Network and as well as other people's. And they have kindly given us $150 to give away to you guys. So what you have to do is to put your phone on that QR code on the table on the back, and that'll take you to a website. You'll enter to win, and we'll draw names on 4:30 on Friday. But you don't have to be present to win. So go ahead and sign up, and we'll gladly give you the Amoco products. And if you can thank Amoco, they do so much for podcasting, ceramic podcasting as a whole. So they have a big booth downstairs. If you want to go and thank them at any point, that would be great.
Yeah, and to tag off of that, our sponsor is L&L Kilns, and they're giving a kiln away downstairs.
Well,
so
that is up in the game right there, a whole
thing.
So sign up for that as well. We're not saying who you need to purchase.
Yeah, do both.
From.
Obviously,
you
do
decide.
Both.
Yeah.
But.
Both, yeah.
At 2 o'clock on Friday.
Or reachable by phone.
Yeah, so don't put a spam number on there.
So, yep. So anyway, yeah. Sign up. But okay. I don't want to.
Yeah. No, that's
obviously.
Good.
No, Amoco's amazing.
You can
amazing.
Enter both.
Amoco's amazing. Sweet. Oh,
they're consistent. I'll
so there is also swag in the back. Yep. Everything is free except for the payable things, which is the bottle you have to pay for and the shirt
and
you
the
have
shirt.
To pay for. But there's a lot of different Brickyard Network things back there. Stickers with, you know,
pins.
All the different podcasts. I don't think we have Wheel Talk stickers back there, but that's okay. I don't think there's Mud Peddlers either. But
I love
that's fine.
Car. That's
I'm sure
bad.
You could find us, and we've got some. We'll have some stickers later,
we'll,
too.
We'll get to it.
Tonight.
Tonight. So.
If we don't leave them in the car.
If you don't leave them in the car. I don't know. You've got them, so.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Okay. All right. We're ready to start. So we're going to start with introducing ourselves. Short little 30 seconds about where we kind of sit and what we do in clay. And then we're going to go into what we're talking about today. So I'll start. I'm Ryan Durbin. I am actually just across the river in Kentucky, about 10 minutes away. So it was home game for me today. I do Wheel Talk with Becca. Wheel Talk Podcast. So if you're familiar with my voice, this is what I look like. and I've been doing pottery since high school, 2007, and then I started selling in 2016. I do this on the side. I majored in an IT field in college, and then I minored in ceramics because I wasn't confident doing the starving artist thing out of college. So I've been in the tech field since I graduated, and I've been selling pottery on the side since 2016. And I share a lot about the business stuff, and I care about that a lot. I would love to do it full-time someday. Don't know when that confidence will be there to make that jump. It's a hard thing to walk away from the salary and all that. But, yeah, that's who I am.
Yeah, and don't let him fool you. His side gig is bigger than my full gig. So, so I'm Becca Otis, and like he said, we do Wheel Talk together, and we've been doing it since 2019, August. And I am a full-time potter and have been since 2014. I learned in college. It's a whole story, but I lied to a professor, and it's, you know, I didn't know anything about it. And I technically live in Indianapolis. I live in my van, and I'm traveling around. I've always traveled, and I've lived in various cars. So I finally switched to the full van life recently, and I am traveling and working on mostly jewelry and smaller pots and just the fancy pots that I do. So yeah, that's pretty much me. Mm-hmm.
And my name is Lindsay M. Dillon. I am one half of the Mud Peddlers. And I've been working in clay since high school, so 2008. And I've been doing it professionally since 2014. I went full-time right before the pandemic hit, which was an interesting transition. And most of my work is inspired by history, mythology, and geek culture. So most of what I do is both selling online and then going to anime conventions, where I get to be a nerd of both ceramics and anime and all the geeky things. So that is what I love doing. And then Dante and I started the Mud Peddlers. Mostly, well, entirely thanks to Dante, because I was like, no, I cannot do podcasts. I am not good enough.
I knew it was fire.
Yeah.
I already knew it.
Yeah. So we started in June of 2020, and we share the behind the scenes of ceramics. So everything from the business side to different studio techniques and just kind of how we do what we do. So that's me.
And I am Dante of Earth Nation.
It's spelled exactly how you think it's spelled.
Yeah. It's spelled exactly how you think it's spelled, Earth Asian Ceramics. Uh-huh. Long story short, I took a college class after going down a deep, dark path in my life for ceramics. And I'm the kind of person that, something bad happens, I just concentrate on one thing to get distracted, and I got a little too good at it. At some point, the government started taking away funding for the National Foundation for Arts. I didn't like that. I decided I'm just going to supply society with it for free if my government's not going to do it. So I put the lessons on YouTube, and that's why I'm here now. And then the Mud Peddlers, of course. Yeah, because I was like, Lindsay, we got to do it. People are bored, and they're in their house, and they got the clay bug, and they don't know what to do with their lives. And she was like, no. And I was like, do it.
And then I did it.
And then she did it. And it was pretty easy to peer pressure her if you do the voice.
Yeah, I feel like it was a point where there was a big boom of all the podcasts coming together. Yep. I mean, Tales of Red Clay has been around forever. Paul's been around forever. There's others that – those are the main two.
It's the millennials who are we can do a podcast.
And then Brickyard Network, what Ben's been doing is blowing up of just so many different perspectives that people have a passion about sharing.
We're not the male – centric, the stereotype of dudes with podcasts. We're not that, so you're welcome.
We are. Me and Lindsay are.
Yeah. Oh, you and Lindsay are. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
For sure.
Just get on the mic. You know what about dudes?
So we're going to be talking about learning through collaboration, and that is a very wide topic, so we're going to try and cover a few of the biggest aspects of that. So, Ryan, you want to get us started?
Yeah, wanted to kind of go into how we collaborate with each other for the podcast, and even just us doing this talk, we had to collaborate with, they have a different way of doing things. We have a certain way of doing things. We can go off the cuff with a prompt and talk for an hour and we'll just figure it out. Or, there's different perspectives of what we want to get out of it. So Beck and I have to collaborate a certain way for the podcast. You all have to collaborate a certain way. Do you want to talk about how you all go about coming up with what you think is worth talking about or who you want to get on and how you go about doing that with Dante?
Yeah,
and we can kind of share. some of that stuff?
Well, from my perspective, as someone who bullet journals avidly, I'm definitely the part of the partnership that is like, Dante, we have to plan out the episode beforehand, and I'm going to sit down and make a list of all the topics we're going to cover.
I'll do none of that.
Yeah. And admittedly, I was definitely more strict with that when we started the podcast, and then the more that we, you know, the more episodes we did, you know, the more we kind of influenced each other. And definitely one of the things that I've taken from Dante is that like definitely more flexibility. Because when I first started the podcast, one of my biggest concerns was like, oh my gosh, like who's going to be listening to this? Is it going to be a gallery director? Is it going to be a fellow nerd who I would talk to at a ceramics or at an anime convention? So that branding aspect was really nerve-wracking for me because we have very different styles of communicating, and I was nervous about how that would play with a potential audience. So in some ways, I have definitely adapted, and I think, again, like we've influenced each other, but how, at least from my perspective, how we plan like going about episodes is that usually like sometimes a couple days, sometimes like if we're interviewing someone, we'll do a couple, like several weeks before we record the podcast. We'll just kind of talk about like, okay, like, you know, what do we want to cover? And then usually the day of recording, we'll sit down for a few minutes. And if I haven't already come up with notes, we'll just kind of briefly go over some of the like main points that we want to hit. And then it's usually how I kind of imagine it is like, I tend to, be the one to be like, here's the path we are on. These are the points we're going to hit. Wait, Dante, rein it in. Rein it in, Dante. But then also, it would be really boring if I was just up there talking by myself.
But that has the character to it, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Like, you kind of need that balance of somebody that can bring that, like, comedic relief, like Becca's comedic relief of us. And she's like, you know.
Yeah.
But she has some great information as well because she's gone through so many, like, decisions. And she'll just jump into something and, like, try it. And then she'll be like, okay, maybe that wouldn't. Like something
don't
that
think
I thought
I know
through,
anything.
But it's like you kind of need some of that balance as well.
It's the presentation. People are like, you present in a strange way. You must not know anything. But realistically, like I know a lot of things.
Yeah.
I know a deep amount of glaze chemistry at this point that I could talk your ears off about, right? But at the same time, it's my collaboration with Lindsay is more. She gives a path, and then I go, it'd be more interesting if we checked out that river over there. And she goes, that's not part of the path. And I go, yeah, but people like rivers. Right. And then she's like, or you know, if one of us has kind of a brain stump, one of us is lacking energy that day, she'll be like, I'm lacking energy, and I'll go, okay, well, like give me a second, and I'll sit in the corner for 10 minutes and do one of those, like, just let me think. And then I'll throw her an idea, she'll write down the idea, she'll siphon it and kind of put it through a crucible of ideas, and it comes out this better version of itself. And that's kind of how we progress through our thought forms every single day. And realistically speaking, we generally have an idea. Don't talk for like 4 days. And then the day before, I'm like, damn, which one of these four topics did you want to do? And she's like, I know more about that one than this one. And I go, I know a lot about this. I could talk your ear about this one. Yeah. She goes, okay, let's compromise and let's see how much we know. And then that's how we set that path.
Yeah.
And for us, we do it kind of spur of the moment a lot of times if we're talking just the two of us together. And there might be something that sparks it. Go ahead.
We haven't planned a podcast in probably two years. Like, for real, though. We kind of, I think that actually what's unique about our experience is that we started because we were, you know, doing lives together, and we would just kind of talk back and forth, and that it's a very natural, like, in terms of collaboration, it's a very natural development for us. And so we're able to get on the, you know, we record every Wednesday night at 9:30, and we get on and we're like, what do you want to talk about today? You know, and we pick out a few, you know, questions, and then we go about it. And as most of you know, and have probably skipped over, we talk about our lives at the beginning of the podcast.
For like 30 minutes
for
or
like
an 30 hour.
Minutes. And so that is something, it kind of like that we're very loose, which is weird for Ryan, not for me.
Yeah. And then if, you know, we kind of go that route for the most part. And then if we have somebody that we have on the episode to talk to, we have to have them on for a specific reason. Like, there's something that we see in them that they have some expertise in that we do not. And that's why we normally reach out to certain people. Or there's just people that we have that we talk to all the time that we're like, they're really cool. Like, we want to talk to them. And it could go on for 3 hours, like Aletha.
Yeah.
Or like Heidi, and we'll talk to forever. And it's just like, it's just fun. Right?
Yeah. But
you don't have to have like a set agenda all the time. And some of that naturally comes about, and then you get gems from those conversations.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody yesterday about collaboration because I've actually been struggling with this topic because the word isn't really registering in my mind. And he was like, well, I think collaboration kind of like comes with a goal. You know, like it comes with an end goal almost, you know. You can have community and you can be working with somebody together, but if you're not like going towards the same product at the end, it might not be considered collaboration because you're just talking to somebody, you know. So, and we all of us have the same goal in mind, very like depending on what we're doing. So,
yeah, and that kind of ties into the next part about community where we try to get a bunch of listener questions because we can't think of every, like we could come up with a topic that we think is relative and would make sense for a lot of people that could have questions. But if you just put it out to the audience and say, hey, what questions do you have? And then we can parse through all of them. I mean, we've probably answered like 300 questions since we started. And yeah, one question could be 2 hours of a discussion, because it's a really heavy topic that has a lot of different parts. And like, I naturally think through all the different parts and then I'll bounce it off Becca. Like, what do you think? Cause we have, our brains work differently of how we would parse through something or approach a problem or a question. And, you know, getting that feedback of somebody else. And then you also get some like, oh, I listened to that episode. I really loved that thing that you all talked about. So that's part of the community aspect of actually reaching out, getting something, and then at least here too, you get feedback. You actually get one-on-one with people and you see like what value they've gotten out of it. What do you like most about listening? Like, who do you enjoy us talking to? So that's kind of how we build community in naturally, even though it's just Becca and I talking. Mm-hmm. Whereas like if we were talking in person with somebody about these questions, like I probably would be more reserved, but like that I'm with Becca, like she like balances it out and like we can have fun with it more.
Yeah. And, you know, realistically, Lindsay said this many times, it feels like screaming into the void sometimes because we're in like a shack essentially recording this podcast.
Don't hate on my studio. It's a nice garage.
I live in a shack too, but I'm not going to call it a mansion. We're just in this place recording this thing and we're just doing it and we put it out and we barely check the numbers, right? But then like you are in this room. So evidently somebody is listening. And just on a macrocosm, part of our idea of community is to give you a piece of information that would help you along your ceramic art or artistic journey. It's not just to have fun as much as I would like that. So Lindsay's often like, I want to get, like, she'll turn off the mic and be like, I want to give them something they could use. And she cuts it out and I'm like, oh, okay, we should probably actually get back on subject instead of talking about anime.
Yeah. I like having that, a little bit of that goal, because again, like, yeah, the, like part of the reason that we started the podcast was because we were just getting together and like hanging out, drinking boba and shooting the shit. And then, yeah, and then that's why Dante was eventually like, hey, we should do this like on a greater level. But yeah, I think one of the things that you guys do really well, which is like something I really admire about what you two do, is that, again, your community involvement is amazing. And I think that's one of the things that can sometimes go unacknowledged about creating community, is that it takes a lot of work. Like everything that y'all do for Pot Swap, like, takes a lot. And I know that's one of the areas that, like, for me, I really struggle with the Mud Peddlers, because it's like, I already have a hard enough time with social media because I'm a terrible millennial and I get overwhelmed with things really easily. So like the fact that you guys find a way to navigate that and then do so much to create community beyond just the podcast itself, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. And that kind of naturally came about. I don't know when we started or why we started it, but
I think we just literally were like, we should do a Secret Santa.
Yeah. Nice. Secret Santa for Potters. And it was like, we'll do it. We'll have people sign up. The initial sign up was DM us your information.
Yeah,
and then we'll put it in a spreadsheet. So we did that the first year and then onward past that. But it's like, I feel like you got to put good karma out there. You got to give a lot and don't expect things in return.
I think that's one thing that we both have in common, is that we, and I would say that a lot of podcasters have in common, and actually a lot of potters, just general teachers on like the interwebs, is that we give a lot, and usually we don't expect anything back from that. And I think that a lot of the passion that comes from pottery is sharing your work and sharing with the community around you. And that is, you know, I think that kind of fuels it a yeah. little bit.
And there's different ways you can do it locally, whether there's like a clay guild in your area that you're a part of that you can invest in, and you can have a more one-on-one in-person connection with and build something that you can see more locally, that like we put on a show together and like we're all together and there's, you know, there's camaraderie, versus the, you know, you put like we put things out in the void and then you hope that they're getting value out of it, and you only get, you know, insight if they DM you or see you at this convention and say like, oh, I really enjoy what you do or talk about.
Yeah, I think the one-on-one connections for me have always resonated a lot in terms of that, creating that sense of community, and just like, just, I didn't think about it from that approach. Like, it wasn't like I got together with my ceramics friends and was like, I would like a community, you know. It was just getting together with other folks to be like, oh, hey, like, you know, I follow you online, like, we follow each other, this is awesome, let's like get together and have some coffee. But over time, that's ended up building relationships with various people. Like, Echeri Ceramics is another like pair of local ceramic artists in Sacramento, and they have been an invaluable resource, and it's, I didn't even intend to go about it that way. But I think that can, for the idea, for, I guess I'll say, for someone like me who finds the idea of like cultivating community, that feels like a really big responsibility and kind of scary, but it can literally just be one-on-one interactions with people. And it can be like, I have a photographer friend who, when I was, I don't know, maybe 4 years or something into Instagram, I was like, hey, I feel like I'm really struggling with my photography. Like, I'm not really sure about my branding. Like, you know, can we like get together? Like, I'll get you a coffee and we'll like talk about this. And even something as small as that can be really impactful. So there's community in a more constructed sense. Like, I would say like what we do, where it's like, we're getting together, we're recording podcasts, we're interacting with, you know, with listeners and viewers. And then there's the more, I guess I could say, not like this isn't organic, but it's more low-key, I guess I'd say, to create community through individuals.
Yeah, just on a strategic level as well, if anyone's writing down notes hoping to get something more for themselves, for their own podcast or something, there is a strategic level of community where, have you ever watched a YouTube video and like, tell me what you think in the comments below? They don't care. You need to comment for the, they might care, but you need to comment for the algorithm. We're essentially setting up mini games for you so that you can, number one, keep the algorithm going. And secondly, that's part of that macrochasm of community. My job is to give you a question so you have some type of back and forth. You will not forget me in your mind if you have that back and forth. You will come back to my channel. You will then have that mini game in your mind. And it also helps a lot for your content. If you say, hey, tell us what you think, and you honestly send me a DM on Twitter or Instagram, I bring it to Lindsay and I go, what do you think about this? She goes, that's a great topic. Mm-hmm. We've just organically made the next episode by your hand.
Yeah.
It's important for that mirror, that back and forth. It's important for collaboration.
And then what about collaborating on pieces themselves? Have you all done collaborations on physical pieces, and how do you approach that just with two different mindsets of what you hope to get out of it? What are you going into it with? How do you all approach that?
Well, Lindsay and I just did one for Tea Cozy. If you've been listening to the podcast, you probably know. But it's just like a little essentially avatar, little teacup that this tea shop was like, can you make us a bunch of these? And Lindsay was like, well, I can make this. We put it in here. And I threw out some ideas. I'm pretty good at silk screening. We made these little cups. We got the right clay. We got a liner glaze. We made them raw on the outside so they feel more organic. And yeah, it was actually way easier just because I like you as a person.
I was going to say too, like, I normally do not like collaborating with people on individual pieces. Because again, like, that's part of the reason why it's like I'm a self-employed person. It's like, you got to tell me what to do. Like, yeah. I get to choose everything. And admittedly, sometimes that means that, you know, I stumble and fall in front of a pit I created myself.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that the reason that I felt comfortable collaborating with Dante is because we had already had like a year or so of the podcast of being able to effectively communicate. Because like again,
every
like
week,
as someone who's basically, because like for me, again, like I'm a white person who was raised as a woman, and therefore I am conflict adverse. So it took being comfortable enough with Dante to say like, nah, I don't want to do that. Let's do this. Or I have this other idea. And it took,
I had to push her to push me.
Yeah.
I had to like, I can see you're uncomfortable. Yell at me. I'm very blunt, and I take passivity as like an offense. Because it feels like you're not being honest with me. So Lindsay will be like, oh, yeah, okay. And I'm like, push, Lindsay, Christ.
Yeah, so now I'm just like, dude.
Please. And now she's like, I don't like that. And I'm like, good, tell me why.
Yeah.
And she tells me why, and I go, that makes sense. And then she's like, oh, that worked. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, of course it worked. You were honest with me and straightforward. Yeah. That's called communication. Yeah. It's crazy.
How has it been for you guys?
Yeah, I don't think... Have you done any collabs, Becca?
No, we haven't done collaborations. But, like, I mean... We're like best friends, so we...
Yeah, we haven't done collabs together. I've only collaborated on physical pieces with a couple folks. I'm actually looking forward to getting some stuff from Heidi in a damp box later that we're going to collaborate on.
I think it's not as much for me about, like, the actual pots as much it is, like, the value that I've gotten from Ryan being my friend over the years and having somebody that I can go to and say, I don't know what to do. and he's like, I got you, you know, like, and he talks through things and I'm like, no, that's not what I mean. And then he says it again. I'm like, no. And we kind of like get to it. I mean, we talk on a date, like almost a daily basis, and off the podcast, like I call him when I'm driving, you know? And so like, I think that that's the biggest thing as far as collaboration is concerned, is that my business and my craft wouldn't be the same had it not been for this lovely individual.
Stop.
I'm curious. Have any of you guys had, you know, Dante as well, like, maybe share an experience of where collaboration was difficult and how you like worked through the challenges that came with collaboration. I'm thinking of like a takeaway for you guys.
I feel like it's like commission order stuff.
Yeah, it's always commissions.
Yeah, it's always it's always commissions.
Yeah, I think it's getting confident in like what is within your skill set, what is unknown, and putting a value to that unknown, and like drawing a line or. And then it's always like pricing, how you price stuff when there's unknown. And like, I'm more of a test it before I commit, because I worry. I've gone the path of you commit to something, you promise a number, and then you get it late. You deliver it and you're like, oh, I should have got more. Or like, I shouldn't have said that number because there was unknowns. But I've kind of got to that point where I'm like, my time is more valuable. So I'm like, either I don't do that or I test enough to where I'm like, I'm confident in what I'm going to tell you. Yeah.
My very first order from somebody I didn't know over the interwebs was a disaster. It was a disaster. They wanted a handle that was sideways instead of up and down, that just didn't work like with gravity. And I actually ended up having to fire that customer. That is a very good example of collaboration that didn't work.
How did it get to that point where you're like, we're done?
I was at a community studio at the time, and I was like going around, I was like, ah! And I was talking to my my teacher, and he was like, I think you're done. He was like, I think you need to drop this lady. And I was like, I think you're right. So, yeah. But on a good note, I mean, I've, like, Isaac, who's actually in here, I went to his house last year and threw $1,000 for him. And that's like a business transaction collaboration situation where, like, I lived with him for a week or 2 weeks and we did stuff. Like, I made mugs and he did handles and stuff like that. And that would have only happened had, like,
through Instagram, right?
And through social media and through connection and through like all of this community. So
yeah, and some of it's like you feel like you're intruding in people's time too on social, that you feel like you're taking time away from them because you're DMing them. Oh, I'm giving them so much work to do. Or like, you know, how many DMs are they responding to? But you know, I'll write somebody and I'm like, oh, I'm not as surprised as some people reply back, because I'm like, okay, well, we've had some give and take. So that's a ongoing collaboration. Or like a lot of times I'll just audio message people, because that's like I can talk to somebody for 10 minutes of a conversation. Like I basically could have called them on the phone and talked to them for 10 minutes, but I like do it through audio and you can actually bounce ideas back and forth. So as long as you're not approaching it as like I'm just trying to take information and like get the things out of you that you're an expert in. And you're actually doing it as a way, like, you're, like, showing interest in something that they provide value on. And then you're, like, how do you relate it back to you? And, like, how do you – it's, like, a natural of, like, bouncing ideas off of. And you kind of need some of that. And there's probably people in the room that you've shared ideas with here that you've got way more value out of than just texting them through DMs online.
Yeah.
That you can't really get unless you talk to somebody. in person.
Realistically speaking, whenever I have troubles with a commission, it's either one of two paths. It's someone who wants to be very, very specific, because realistically, when someone asks you for a commission, you are then collaborating with them. They have an idea of what they want in their head, and they assume that you can supply it. And a trick that Lindsay actually taught me is to have a conversation with them beforehand instead of just like, yeah, I can do that. Right. So she's like, well, let's see what you want. And then she had a line. You had a line.
I have a list of questions to ask a potential client.
Because she says, what's the thing you say? Let's see if I'm the right person for you.
Yeah.
Is the thing she says. And I was like, oh, that's dirty. I like that. that's like saying I might not be the one for you, which is essentially like breaking up with someone. You know, you're rejecting them in the nicest way possible.
Do you send those questions one at a time so that you're getting like a trickle of answers,
or do you just
send them a questionaire?
Because you're pretending to have a conversation.
Giving them homework.
I basically send them a questionnaire because I think what can happen sometimes is that information can get lost, and I like having everything right there. And also, I've had a few folks sometimes like reach out, oh, we got a lost bottle cap. It is found. We have, I think it's... How do I say? I've had folks sometimes reach out and kind of flippantly ask if I can do something. And, you know, it's fine if someone doesn't understand the process of ceramics, but I think if they're willing to fill out this, like, it's like five questions, it's not like a big thing. But if they're willing to take the time to fill out these questions, then it kind of shows that, okay, they're willing to put in a bit of time. So they're not just like, hey, I need you to bang out
these
cups real
quick.
I was going to say, usually what I end up asking after my intro line of like, oh, thank you so much for, you know, your interest in my work. You know, I'd love to hear more of what you have in mind, just to make sure we're on the same page and that I'm the right person for this project for you. Here's some questions that would be helpful for me to have the information
for both of us.
It's basically what I say. Yeah. And I will usually ask how many pieces, like do general, like generally speaking, what do you have in mind? So that's kind of like a broad thing. I'll ask, do you have a timeline in which you need them finished? Because sometimes people are like, next week. And I'm like, ooh.
Deal breaker.
You're not getting it next week, dog.
It's not going to work.
It's not happening.
Yeah. So I'll ask that. I'll ask, you know, what is your budget? Because again, sometimes folks don't realize how much time and, you know, and again, like for someone who, since I've been doing this for a while, I can charge more than someone who may be just starting out. So, and then if there's like, those are, I guess, basically the three main questions that I start out with. And then that immediately gives me some information of like, okay, is this going to work or is this not going to work? And before both you and the potential client spend a lot of time going back and forth, you get that information real quick. And then you can, another thing I'm usually a huge fan of is if I'm either not interested in that project or because of various situations, I'm just not available for it. I usually like recommending 2 to 3 different artists who might be available for that interest, because that's also another way to like create community. And again, since like particularly with ceramics, it tends to be a fairly like white dominated space. If I can, I like being able to suggest other artists who, you know, represent different identities than what I have myself. So,
yeah. And just to go back to the commission-y part, there's generally going to be someone who you're trying to collaborate with who has a very specific idea in their head. And you have to know when to just say no. I remember one specific customer like 8 years ago who wanted a specific blue from the 1920s. You know those old refrigerators and video games? They're always like this weird seafoam blue that are made with lead. She really, really wanted that color. And I contacted a company that had like the old recipe and I got it. I spent $200 getting this glaze for these like 2 foot, I know, for these 2 foot tall vases that she wanted. And she paid me like $60.
Oh, my dude.
I didn't know at the time. And at the time, I thought I was lucky to get any amount of work. So someone said, I want your work. I like it. Was when I first started Instagram. And I said, yeah, of course. Of course. And then I said, yes, not going through Lindsay's method because I'm dumb. And by the time I went through all of the work, and that $200 wasn't paid for my time. It was just me saying yes to something and then going, wow, you really wanted something extra specific. On another note, my favorite commissions are the ones who are like, I want something from you. And I say, okay, I go through the conversation. And I get the vibe, and usually my favorite sentence is, I don't care how long it takes. I just want you to experiment and give me the best version of whatever. Mm-hmm. That makes me so happy because I can play. I get like a month of experimentation, and if they give me money, that's chemicals right there. Buy a new porcelain, XYZ, and they get the best thing that I can offer. And the cool thing is that I think it's the best product for them because I've looked through their, I've stalked them a bit, and I've thought, okay, they like this, they like this, they like this. It gives me freedom to express myself specifically for them. But if you want a mug with your dog prints on it, then I'll go buy a stamp and give you a liner glaze. And
you will go do that?
I'll do that for you. I'm going to charge you a lot because it's ticky-tacky, but I'll do it.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that gets pretty deep of how many, like, you want to be flexible to them when you're early on, because you're like, I don't have another sale waiting that I can choose between. So it's like, do I trust that I make a bunch of shit and then I go to a show and hope that people buy it? Or do I go for this person that's putting money out? It's like, and then what is that value of something that I got to make? Like, my dad will ask me to make a bird bath or something. I'm like, I don't fucking make bird baths, dude. Like, go buy one at Lowe's for like $30.
My mom asked me to make a 22-ounce mug, and I was like, no. And so I asked my friend. I bought it from my friend down the street. And just gave it to her.
You're like, hey, Ashley, do you have a mug?
She won't ever buy another mug for me. She doesn't want my pottery. She's committed
support
to
your
my
friends,
friend.
Yeah. Oh,
she's committed.
The parents are deep, man. The parents, my mom comes in, she's like, I love this blue. And I was like, yeah. She's like, I know you know how to develop glazes. Why don't you make it anymore? And I'm like, I'm done with that. I'm on to another blue. And she's like, are you done with it? I'll make you one in blue, mother. Thank you. And then she steals a piece from the pile of stuff I don't like and runs away. The parents are deep in the. They're,
you could also say no and then be like, go buy Heidi's.
She's stronger than me.
And they'll build their own collection of work, of other people's work. And then they get friends with them. And then you don't even know that they're friends. And you're like, okay.
Which, as we know, Ryan's mom has done. So, we love her.
Yeah.
We love you, Deech.
I can't say no to my mom. I'm the smallest one in my family, and she's stronger than me. I'm 230. I'm the smallest one.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think I once had, speaking of, you know, I don't make XYZ, I once had someone approach me at Fanime down in San Jose. It's a big anime convention. Mm-hmm. And this very enthusiastic person walked up and was like, can you make me a Baby Yoda lamp? And I'm like, okay, first of all, you probably don't know that would cost you like hundreds of dollars. But I was like, I don't want to make you feel bad. Because again, like, people who, like, I like everyone in this room, like, you know, we know the ceramic things. Most of the public is not going to know that. And I don't think we should, like, make them feel bad or expect that they should know that. So I was like, well, you know, that could be a really interesting project. Why don't you send me a message, like, after the convention and we can talk about it further online. And she never messaged me. So I'm like,
yeah. So I saw, like, a Baby Yoda at the table before and was like, I would love I need a lamp.
Yeah.
But I love Baby Yoda.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, admittedly, if Guillermo del Toro, because he is one of the holy trinity of my artistic inspirations, I'd make anything from that man. If he wanted a 6-foot-tall Baby Yoda, I would figure out how to get it done. But yeah, but that's another thing with collaborations. Like, I definitely, like, there are folks that I will make room for in my practice. Like, again, like, Tea Cozy.
Yeah.
Because I bought tea for them, like, ever since I was, I don't know, like, in high school or something like that. So when I got the opportunity to work with them, I was like, you know what? You're not quite able to meet, like, they didn't have the budget for what I would normally charge for a cup. But I was like, for me, this relationship is more important than maybe that standard price. And I just know, okay, I won't take, I'm only available for a certain number of commissions, like, per year, but I wanted to maintain that relationship. So that's something else that I think is a part of collaboration, is like, within the different things that are important to you, you know, finances, community, et cetera, is finding a way to, like, balance all of that so mm-hmm. that you're not overstretching yourself.
I think Becca wants to say something.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I also, like, as you said that, I was thinking about my best friend who, and Ryan's my best friend, but he's my Kentucky
She's got,
best
like,
friend.
Four best friends.
I have best friends just best based friends. On states, okay? So my Washington best friend is Andrew, and he's, like, 24. He's young, but smarter than all of us. And we collaborated on a piece. Ironically, he went through a stage of getting mugs from China, and I designed the mug. I designed four different believer logos, like Yeti, unicorns, mermaids, and like aliens. And it was like, I believe. And it's to this day, if you search my name on the Google, his mugs come up instead of me. But I think it's really important to include not only the people that are in this base community, mm-hmm. but also the people that are completely out of it. You know, like Andrew, he does stationery stuff, and he's doing really well. And we talk all the time, and through his different perspective, I have grown, and through my in my perspective, he has grown, mm-hmm. and that, and like when we do projects together, it's always super, super duper like weird and fun and very unique, and so and that can like push you in ways that you wouldn't expect. You know?
I feel like you have to talk in a room with another person that does the same thing, and you're like, you're a production potter, okay, let's talk. But it's like, yeah, if you talk to somebody outside of it.
They were cone 10, by the way.
And that's definitely a takeaway that you all should have going away with, is like, have somebody that you can talk to. You know, Becca might be my person. She's probably got three people. You know, have somebody that you can talk to on a regular basis to bounce ideas off of. Like she said, it doesn't have to be the same thing you're doing. And it could, especially if they're like a different mindset of like how they would approach a problem, or then they can give you ideas that you don't think of. Because like, I could think of X number of things ahead of time and go down that path of what it actually means if I start making a certain type of work, and I'm like, how do I scale it and all this stuff? And she could just be like, you know, just experiment and like have fun. Like, why do you have to think of it that way of like selling it? Mm-hmm. You know, like come up with a way that you can bounce ideas off somebody and then run with it, try things, and then see if it works or if it doesn't. And like, if you can afford to make those choices to chance it, like, do it.
Just working off of what Ryan said, I think it's valuable to have another person for sure, but to have another fresh set of eyes, because like Lindsay, your mom is like, right? We sat in the little shed for like 3 hours, boba, of course, in hand, bellies full. Like, oh, what are we going to call this podcast? Oh, let's call it this, call it this, call it this. And on God, her mom came out and was like, call it the Mud Peddlers. And we were like, fuck.
Yeah.
My mom's, why are you great, so good at ideas? And she's like, thanks, nerds. Went back in the house, and like that's how we got our name. And like, she's not even in the ceramic field with us. She's just a fresh set of eyes. It never hurts to go outside the field just to ask them, because they have a completely different perspective from what we have. Like, we have clay brain. Other people don't have clay brain, but there's plenty of things that go with clay brain that aren't clay. Mm-hmm. All right.
We should probably do Q&A soon. Yeah. Should we do it now?
It'd be 3:10 right now.
Okay. Yeah, all right. You have to line up at the mic. You have to talk into the mic.
Fight for it.
So if you have a question.
Line it up. There it is.
Yeah.
Aggressive Klingon. I like it.
And it doesn't have to be.
Introduce yourself, please.
Oh, I'm Nico. Hi. I'm Z Design Studio on Instagram. Lindsay.
Yes.
Why are you wearing what you're wearing? Because it has not been addressed yet.
That is true. That is true. All right. Well, I am wearing a outfit based on the novel and TV show The Handmaid's Tale. And briefly, The Handmaid's Tale is a dystopian fiction novel, becoming increasingly real. It's based on the idea that a religious fundamentalist group takes over the United States and essentially turns women into second-class citizens, and then for handmaids specifically, essentially into breeders. So this particular outfit, The Handmaid's outfit, has been used across the world to represent protests against laws, against regimes, against various governments that have tried to restrict the rights of women and people with uteruses. So since we are in Ohio, Ohio is trying to also restrict reproductive rights access. And as someone for whom reproductive rights has always been very important to me, I wanted to bring this outfit. And I made it all, and I was basically like, okay, it's in Sika. For the most part, folks are probably going to be, even if they disagree, they're probably going to be nice about it. And everyone's been very, very kind. But I thought, you know, when we travel, we don't always think about where we're going and what it means to travel into that state. And for me, as someone who's raised as a woman, I use she and they pronouns. But it was definitely on my mind that I was like, wow, if I lived in this state where Nsika is happening, my rights would be severely curtailed. And so it's just something that I wanted to bring awareness to, you know, no matter where you are on the perspective of reproductive rights. But that's why I'm here. So thank you for that question. I appreciate that.
No, yeah, clap.
No.
And
oh my gosh.
What do you say?
Thank you. That wasn't hard, was it?
Next question.
I'm Tamara. I am Sunrise Pottery. I have a question. So When do you go from like a hobbyist to a production potter? Like, I don't know.
Ooh.
Am I a production
when you run
potter?
Out of room?
I would say
that is like.
And you have to sell stuff.
I'm not
okay,
really.
Okay.
Like, how do you like labeling yourself as a hobbyist
yeah,
versus
like,
a product like a professional potter?
Like,
I guess
professional
or a,
potter. I would say production potters like.
But people are like, oh, a production potter. I don't want to be a production. I'm
oh,
like,
production
I don't know.
Potter.
I want to be a potter.
The titles
like,
are neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lindsay had to look me in the eye and say, "We're professionals." And for like 3 months, I was like, "No, ooh, woo." She's like, "We're professionals," and I was like, "Okay, we're professionals now."
Yeah.
Like the titles don't matter.
Yeah.
Yes, the titles do not matter, but I will say that, like, there is a certain point where, when I worked at Starbucks in high school, and they were like, there's gonna be a day that it just clicks, like, all of it just clicks for you, mm-hmm. and sure as shit, that day came, and I was like, holy crap, I know exactly how to make that, and everything is right. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have, like,
You're not a robot.
Yeah, you're not a robot, but like when people yeah. say production potter, like I'm an actual production potter where I make like 100 plus pieces a day, right? Like, I mean, not right now, but like that's my job. But like a, you know, a studio potter, that's a professional potter and that's somebody, you know, who's making money from it. Mm-hmm. I would say that if you're making money from it in a substantial form,
okay,
that's a goal to go towards.
Okay.
If you're looking for like a label,
okay, well, yeah, I don't want.
Yeah, I would consider hobbyists as like
potter,
not breaking even, kind
yeah.
of. I guess.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's kind of how I distinguish the hobby versus the profession. I don't know. It's a weird.
Like, you can be a professional potter and not make any money your whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look at Picasso. He was a professional painter, and he didn't. He died poor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like it's right. Didn't he die poor? No, it was the other guy. Van Gogh. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Van Gogh. Thank you.
I never studied art. I don't know.
Like, he died poor, right? So, like, most painters die poor. But, like, it's, I don't know, it's something inside of you that's like, oh, yeah, I've hit it.
Okay. Yeah, I think the production potter for me is more like skill. Like, you get to a certain level of skill that
yeah.
you're just like, in like efficiency comes to mind when I think of that too, that mm-hmm. you're, there's an intention of, I'm doing this efficiently. It doesn't mean you're doing it sloppily.
Yeah.
But you're doing it efficiently, you're
with
minimizing
purpose.
The steps, and
yeah.
there's, you know, you're trying to reproduce at a quantity that is good for business as well.
Mm-hmm. I personally think there's two different axioms in which you would call yourself a hobbyist versus someone who's proficient at it, and that would be the axiom of how much money you're making versus how skilled you are at the craft, because
mm-hmm.
you better believe that there's someone out there who's better than you at what you're doing,
yeah.
right? And we all know that. That's no surprise. It's not a dig at anyone. But at the same time, if you're doing it and not making money, there's a certain value to it. It's more of a self-title, but there is a level of proficiency and money that are combined, those two axioms.
Mm-hmm.
They have a cross-section where you go, this is viable for me and I enjoy it. And that's where it kind of stops being a hobbyist. You know, I still have a 9-to-5 job. I'm not a hobbyist.
Yeah.
Right. He you still know? Has a 9-to-5 job too, and he's...
Right.
Not
yeah.
a hobbyist.
But people in America seem to, like, oh, what's your real job? Shut your mouth.
This is my real job. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. That was a great question.
Hi, my name's Sharon. I'm the owner of Best Pottery Studio in New Jersey. And as a studio owner, I have this question for Dante, but then it can just go down. It's two questions, like two-part question. The first part is... How do you balance, like, making, like, functional pieces that you sell, but then making the pieces that you want to make?
Mm.
Like, how do you carve out time for that?
Mm.
And does your collaboration with Lindsay or collaboration with anybody else, like, get you to, like, give you that push more to, like, make stuff that you really want to make versus, like, just the functional?
Are you asking me to give you motivation, or are you asking me how I find mine to do the separation?
How you find yours, yes.
Okay, because I can do both. No, I'm sorry. Realistically speaking, I kind of like, it's my dirty little secret that I keep my really nice art pieces to myself, just as a sneak peek. I'm planning a whole season where I make like the really nice stuff. But realistically speaking, in order to make that really nice stuff, I have to be able to make money on some facet. The amount of lithium and the amount of zinc and the amount of XYZ chemicals to make the new glaze that I just made that I posted on Glazy, it's not for free. It's not free 99. So like, I have to be able to sell at a rate at which supports my love of the art. Now, when I have days where I'm able to create what I want to create, I purposely set aside time for those days. I don't know how other people's brain works, but I'm a little on the scale. Like, the lights are real loud right now to me, right? And I can hear the electricity and the hum of the machines, and it's counted in, right? So I have this thing where I go, that's a shape I want to make, and it stays in my brain until it gets out of my brain. That means at that time I need to plan out time and say, hey, PlayStation, I can't love on you right now. I'm sorry. And then I go, I have a specific clay, I have a specific glaze, I have pieces that will just never see the light of day because I think they're never perfect. But in the meantime, while I'm not setting up that time for myself for that one piece that I have in mind that I've pre-planned out, I'm essentially making production work to support that piece that I will later plan out. You really have to set aside time. Just like going to the gym, you got to set aside time for yourself. Can't work yourself to death and do a screen all day, you know, as much as I would love to.
Kind of piggybacking off of that. I also set aside specific time, but usually what I end up doing is, since I'm lucky enough to be invited by a local gallery to participate in their October, like, kind of spooky themed shows, I, for the last couple years, that has sort of been an external guideline, or an external deadline that sort of forces me to stop the production work, which is what I normally do because I'm not nearly as efficient as both of you. So it takes me a really long time to like make the inventory that I need for like an anime convention where I will need to bring like around, you know, like 200 pieces or something, 200, 250. And, so I do sort of, and it's not exactly collaboration, but it's using an external deadline of that gallery show will help me set aside the time to work on sculptural pieces because most of, like, y'all know, if you follow my work, you'll know that most of what I post is functional pieces. It's nerdy art, but sculpture is actually how I got into ceramics. I just don't make it as often. One other thing that I've done is part of the reason that I started my Patreon is to sort of include that as my, like, okay, when I, over several months, when I get to a certain income point from Patreon, I can go, okay, I can afford to essentially take a month off from my normal production work to work on a sculpture. Because that's usually about how long it takes me to work on a sculpture, like, start to finish. So I chunk out my time like that.
Yeah. For me, I don't rely on the income for anything that I need. So I just make what I like making. I make volume. I like making volume in the studio. So throwing a lot on the studio, like I'll crank out 30 spoon rests and really enjoy it. But I could throw mugs. They're really simple mugs. And I really like the way it looks when it comes out of the kiln. It's just a simple glaze combo. And it's like, it just looks beautiful to me. And I'm like, but sometimes I'm like, I do get that itch where I'm like, I need to make something a little fancier. It's sort of imposter syndrome of like, you gotta push yourself to set yourself apart from other people because they could recreate your $36 mug and sell it. But like, I sell to most people that aren't potters. So for me, I enjoy that one-on-one with customers that could find joy in it in their home. And then I've got to challenge myself with Becca to be like, hey, you should like try this thing. Or like talking with Tim C on a podcast and he's like, why do you make spoon rest? Like, where's spoon rest going to go for your career? But it's like, but I really like making them. So it's like finding that balance of, okay, I could still make this bread and butter thing. It's good for business as well as, you know, I have to make mugs. Like, I love making mugs too, but also like I can free up some time to do other things because I don't need that income and like wait for it as well. And I just like to make a lot of shit. Like, I don't know.
Gotta do it for the soul sometimes.
Can you repeat the question?
It was about how do you balance, like, making what you want to make.
You own a studio and it's community.
I own a studio, yeah. So I don't make a lot of stuff. And my students always ask me, they're like, oh, well, what do you make? And I'm like, nothing.
Do you want to make things?
Yeah. But I don't know how to, like, carve out that time. So I was like.
Yeah, I actually owned a studio in Washington for 3 years. And it's really fucking hard, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I'm not going to say that it's not. Because that's really important to know that it is really, really hard. I would say, and the thing that, something that has stuck with me since college is that my professor said she paints for 2 hours a day, no matter what. And making it a priority in your life and making that boundary and carving out that time, just like Dondi said, is really important. And as somebody who's owned a studio and somebody who's burned out from a studio, it's really important to have those boundaries and do something that you actually like, because especially clay people, we are introverts naturally, typically, and we are starting these community studios that have everybody in them. You need to take that space. What I did for myself is I actually made a quite literally the size of this table size studio in the back of my studio, and I faced a wall and I made my things without anybody there at night, and that was my time. And that was, and nobody could bug me there, mm-hmm. you know? And if they were standing behind me, I didn't know they were there, you know? So that's what I would find, what works for you and implement that, but make it your priority. That's the biggest thing. The biggest thing I can give to you is boundaries within the studio space. Yeah. If you're an owner, is huge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sephora.
I hate mics. Hi. Sephora, hi. Nobody needs to remember it.
What's up?
Hi. First of all, thank you. This was awesome. I have a podcast-related question. Do you guys ever have any topics where you're like, nope, we're not going there? Is it always ceramics, clay-related? If it's not clay-related, do you ever feel like there is a line that we're not crossing, and this is that line?
For Lindsay and I, it's never a topic. It's always like we're discussing a topic, and then I've had too much pre-workout or coffee that day, and then she's like, chill, dog. Like, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's been a couple times where we...
She's like, shut.
Yeah, it's like, get it together. No. No, I think for me, it's like... If we're going to discuss something that's not clay related, we're reserving that for what I will eventually start, which is our patron only like a podcast extra episode.
Night Peddlers, baby.
We're calling it the Night Peddlers, yeah. Mm-hmm. So if it's not clay, specifically clay related, like I kind of do have it as a separate, right, in my mind, I keep it as a separate thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of like topics that we just don't touch that are clay related, for me, it's mostly if there is a topic that is potentially delicate and something that would require a lot of research and like understanding to be able to properly present even on a surface level.
What's an example?
Oh, an example I would say is like the...
we talk about it beforehand, and then she's like, this is the way we're going to talk about it. And then I go, yes or no. And that's, we do the, you know.
Yeah, but this isn't, like, my outfit isn't clay-related. In terms
What's
of a
clay-related topic? Yeah.
Clay-related topic, I would probably say, like, the history of porcelain and how it relates to, like, white supremacy in ceramics.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's something that... I know just enough to be like, oh man, right, there's this whole history that I barely understand that influences this medium that I'm a part of. But I don't feel comfortable enough to talk about that on the podcast. First of all, because like I'm white, like Dante is, I don't know.
I'm how creamer. I mean. Like,
yeah.
Like I do make your coffee whiter, but I am half and half.
Yeah. So it's like that's a conversation that should have some diversity to it.
That's what they call me in high school. I'm sorry.
Oh my god.
She's gonna give you a hug.
Oh my god, that's beautiful.
I would say for us, the more I listen to like For Flux's Sake, I'm like, ooh, some of those chemistry ones, like I feel like I don't want to give advice. Like I'll definitely call out like For Flux's Sake and be like, they know way more than we do about chemistry. Like,
yeah,
we're not gonna answer that stuff.
We definitely said that like the last time. We were like, yeah, if you want to really talk about chemistry, don't listen to us.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, we're very open about like, I'll just hop on. I mean, if you've listened, I'll just hop onto Google while we're like literally recording.
In the moment,
like,
yeah.
Like, who did this? And I'll like Google it, yeah, and we'll find out together, yeah, you know?
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I would say like we generally don't do anything political or anything that's like going to divide people or try to like put our foot in the sand and like, I would say we stay away from that. Like a lot of it, like I don't have my opinions formulated. Like I'm still thinking through things. Like I could see things on one side and then go through the other side and like balance back of like different ideas, but like I don't think that's something that we bring value on, so like I don't want to speak to that stuff.
And we
personally
kind of like discussed it earlier, it's like we want to be a light in a world that is dark, you know, in a sense. Like we know that we could talk about things, but also we know that people need to escape from things and listen to something that might just be funny or might just be about what they want to listen to. And we might not be the best people to bring those other items to the table. And if that time comes, but yeah, that's where we're at.
It's never
it's never felt like you had any sort of responsibility as somebody who has a platform or a listening base to. I would say it's up to this. I'm just
what you want to do.
Yeah.
Right? What was
like,
that?
I would say it's up to what you want to do, like whether you feel like that's your call, if you feel called to
I'm asking you.
I would say, like, I personally feel like I would like to speak on the ceramics and the business because, like, that's what I'm knowledgeable in. Like, that's what I can provide value to because I have my own experiences. Becca has her own experiences. Like, we can share from that perspective, but.
And our personal,
or we can have a person on that could relate to, like, having a family and doing pottery. Like, we don't
know
about
that.
Like, we can't speak
kidding,
to that. So
kids,
we'll have somebody that we talk to about that. And that's what we look out for when we have some topic that we're like, we can talk about how you get back into the studio after a year after having a kid. But, like, I mean, how much value are we going to provide on that topic?
To your point, I do think it's valuable to temper yourself when you have some type of platform. We all know Kanye. But,
we have personal platforms, too. Yeah. Like, all of us have a personally large platform. And I think that we can address those also individually, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sephora.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, this will be the last question.
2 minutes.
Okay.
You're it.
Chrissy Mitchell, Cat and Owl Creations, Seattle, Washington. aside from things that you guys sell, like your best sellers, what are your favorite forms or sculptures that you like to make?
You're not going to like it. I love double hump Japanese gourds. It took me a year to learn how to do them without making them a composite piece like many people do. I now throw them in a cylinder, a hump, a waist, a mouthpiece. And they are my favorite shape for a very obvious reason. If you'd like me to.
I think he has to now.
It's a tiny bit. My videos are based off of stacking knowledge, right? So like, you have to learn how to throw a cylinder, then you have to learn how to push out, and then you have to have the knowledge to choke in, and then you have to do it again without making the clay crinkle, and then we have to have the conversation about corks, and then we have to have the conversation about coefficient of expansion and how to calculate that so you can put the cork at the bottle, and then we have to have the conversation about how it historically ties into Japanese culture. Like, those are stacking videos. Those aren't like, let me show you how to make bottle real curvy, real good.
I love that. Yeah, I'd say for me, my very favorite thing to make are creature sculptures. And I love creature sculptures because they are a way for us to talk about things that are related to humanity, but sort of like adjacent to it. And you can observe a sculpture like that. I'd like to think like you can be like, wow, that's a cool looking creature. And that can be it. And that's awesome. But you can also end up like, because I usually have various concepts behind my creature sculptures. It can also be a way to talk about something like I made a sculpture for someone who has the sculpture in the audience. They have the sculpture, but it was a piece that had to do with death and how we honor the people who have passed. And you can do that through creature sculptures without explicitly being like, I'm talking about death, you know. And I love being able to do that through creature sculptures. So that's me.
I don't know. I feel like I like to throw a lot of shot glasses. I don't know.
For Ryan, it's all about the process. Like, I feel like it's just like the amount.
Like, if I get studio time and get like
goal-oriented.
He's so efficient when I watch his stuff.
I don't know. I just like a big block of time in the studio and I can just crank out a lot of stuff.
That's
so.
Right, yeah.
You're stupid efficient. Like, you're.
I don't know.
I watch your stuff and I'm like, that's like 200 pieces behind him. And he's like, hey guys, I've been here for 5 minutes. And I'm like, yeah. And I have a whole day to make 20 mugs that I've like painstakingly drawn out, you know?
I would say probably the same, but also I've been really enjoying kind of slowing down and doing like jewelry right now. Mm-hmm. It's small. I've always loved small things. It's small. But more than that, the audience that brings to it, like women, when they pick up something, they're like, wow. And like they do that with cups, but it's not the same. It is not the same. They're like, I'm going to put these in my ears and wear them, you know? And so I think that that's what it's more the reaction that brings me the joy. And I love wearing, clearly, I love wearing earrings. So that's like something that I really enjoy about that. So,
yeah, I like the in-person shows much more.
Oh, yeah.
Like the one-on-one and seeing the reaction. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like, I'm going to pick out my favorite mug or like.
Yeah.
It seems kind of simple, but it. Yeah.
I do that too. I totally put mugs on my face.
It's so weird. You guys do that too?
I pick up a mug and I can't do it here at Enseca because I got to be sort of.
Well, now they know.
Why? I'm going to go into the cup room and touch all the cups and put them on my face.
I'm like, Lindsay, I developed a new red. She's like, oh. And I'm like, don't put it on your face. She's like, but I want to. And I'm like, it just came out the kiln.
Yeah. So warm and cozy.
You're better than me. I lick things to make sure they're vitrified. So.
Yes.
Anyway, we are done.
Yes.
We're done. But also, like we said, podcast meetup tonight at Ryan Guy's Brewery from 7 to 10. There's also the Imposter show from 6
to 10 at six same to 10. Place.
Buy lots of beer. Come prepared with your wallets and your minds.
And so, Becca's earrings will transport. They will fit in your suitcase.
Yes, I will be selling things. So. Not with imposters. I will just have a Rubbermaid.
Yeah. I know at least Dante and I are also going to just be hanging around outside for a bit if y'all have any other questions that you didn't get to. We're going to be here for a bit.
If you want to hang out with us for a good 20 minutes, we'll be outside. I'll have the recorder. Ask any questions.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Guys. Appreciate it. Yay.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Mud Peddlers. We would love to hear from you, so if you want to share your thoughts about the episodes or just see what Dante and I are working on in our studios, come say hi. You can find links to my social media at lindseymdillon.com. That's LindseyM as in monster, DILLON.com.
And you can visit my pottery shop or see what I'm working on at earthnationceramics.com. And you can find me all over social media at earthnationceramics. It's spelled exactly how you think it's spelled.
And if you want to support the show, hear some bonus episodes, and see some behind the scenes of my work, you can support me and the show at patreon.com/LindseyMDillon. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.